Hey, this is Zachary Strebeck, your host. This episode of Legal Moves features the third part of my conversation with Jeremy Commander and Brian Hank. We have a great discussion about whether or not you should partner up with others or just stay solo when you're designing a game. Before we get into that, though, I'd just like to mention a few of my own projects that I'm excited about. First is my seminar that I'm doing at Gen Con on Friday, July 31st at noon. I'll be going over some of the common legal pitfalls that come up in game development and how you can avoid them. I'll also do a Q&A to answer questions from anyone in attendance. So go to gencon.com and search for the event entitled Avoiding Legal Pitfalls in Game Development. The code number is Sierra Echo Mike 1582775. I hope to see you there. Also, I've launched a new website called Indie Generator at indiegenerator.com. On this site, you'll be able to build game-specific contracts using our easy questionnaires and checklists for a fee that's much less than you'd have to pay a lawyer. You can use the code INDIEGEN50OFF to get 50% off for the rest of 2015. I'll be adding a board game publishing agreement in the next few days, so I know a lot of listeners may be interested in that. All right, that's enough out of me. Enjoy the show. So let's get on to our main topic. We're going to talk about working with partners, going solo, what do you do, is there a benefit to either one? So my first question was, you know, what does it take to do this game design solo? You know, do you have to have this crazy varied skill set? I mean, I think we do. We've pointed out multiple examples, you know, where a publisher has a certain set of skills versus right. the artist or a designer. I mean, there's so many things that go into board games and, forget about, you know, video games. Video games have a ridiculous amount of varied skill sets that need to go into them. Not to belittle board games, but I think that there's much more involved with creating a video game. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think I'm crazy? Okay.
Yeah. I've done both. Mm-hmm. That's one of the main reasons I wanted to leave the digital game world is because it takes a team of people to really do a good job on right. it. If it's just me writing code, it's going to take me forever, months or years to make a game, you know, that I feel, you know, stands up to some of the other games that are out there.
Right.
Brian needs $9 million to make a Star Citizen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So tabletop gaming,
pledge.
I mean, yeah, you still need a wide variety of skills for tabletop gaming, but it's far narrower than you need to make a digital game.
Right.
It seems easy looking on the outside. Like, oh, I just, you know, print some stuff out and make a game. Yeah.
Right.
I think it seems easy at first glance.
Yeah. The most important thing is to be able to take a step back and look and be okay with not having some of those skills.
Right.
And then going out and getting that. And then you either have to make partnerships, with people, like maybe know them or just pay for them. You know, so but that's the most important thing, to just realize, hey, I'm not a graphic designer. I need to go find one.
Right. And you know, for
I'm
a very
bad at
visual
rules. And you know, people read my rules, right? They don't understand them. I need to have my editor friend help me with these rules.
Right, but so many Kickstarter campaigns sort of live or die by what they look like, right? And if you're a great designer but you are terrible at graphic design or art, you know, you need to go out and we talked about it last week. You know, sometimes you have to spend a little money to get that looking up to snuff. So you either, like Brian said, you either have to partner with someone or you need to hire them and pay them money.
I think a lot of games overlook graphic design. I mean, right. like a lot of games have nice art and they just have a terrible layout for that art. It makes it hard to read the cards, hard to understand it. And like, man, if only this was a little flow chart or had a better design. Mm-hmm. And they got beautiful art, but it's laid out in a terrible way and it compromises the game. And that graphic design just kills it.
Right. Again, it's a very different skill than illustration, right? The design and how to put everything together.
So I would say for me, I did some games solo. Booze Barons is really solo. That's me. I've had two designer friends help me out with that, but that's really my own design.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done several designs solo, and I'll be pitching one of them. Of another one soon, but I've decided not to start any more solo designs. At the same time I was doing some of the solo designs, I started some with my design partner, and those games came out so much better and progressed so much faster with that design partner. But like this is much more productive as we have complementary skills and
right.
we level up that game and make it go a lot faster than either of us working alone. He has some, my design partner has some of his own solo designs too. And some of them are kind of languishing or are progressing slowly. But the ones we do together tend to turn a lot better. We've shelved a lot of the stuff we've done together too. This was terrible. Like, oh, this is not good. We're going to shelve it. But generally our best games from between both of us were co-designs we worked on together.
Yep. Brian?
Yeah, same for me. Can I design a game on my own? Yeah, definitely. I can do that. But one that I work with my design partner Clayton on is going to be so much better. And like Jeremy said, we're going to get there so much quicker too.
Right.
I'll often start a design on my own and I'll work on it for a while. But then before long, I definitely need to finally, you know, kind of propose it to Clayton and be like, hey, Clayton, all right, had this idea. I've been playtesting it on my own and, you know, just go through it. And then I have to just kind of like hand it off to him and let him take it for a while. And we'll go back and forth a lot, too. It's not just, you know, I work on it, then he does, then I do, then he does. We work together on it as much as we can with me in California and him in South Dakota. But yeah, I would never try to make a game on my own. I just can't even imagine doing it.
Are any big drawbacks to partnering with someone else that you've noticed? I mean, maybe not from your own personal experience, but maybe some anonymous stories from other people.
It depends on how well you work creatively together. Because, right. You know, people can have very different opinions on how to do things. And to make that relationship work, you know, how often are you willing to swallow your tongue and listen to the other guy? Because, you know, that's their area of expertise. And they say, well, we really should not do this because this is too complicated. Or we should do it this way. Can you suppress your ego your idea got shot down,
mm-hmm.
and go, yeah, that's right. I'm gonna roll with that. And part of that, you know, how well do you work together and be able to do so in a collaborative way,
right.
and to respect the other person's ideas and be okay with your ideas, you know, not all making it because they kind of get vetoed.
Right.
Can you navigate that process or not?
You have to trust each other, right? You have to trust that their judgment and that they're doing the right thing.
But yeah, and also just listening to that feedback.
Yep.
That's the most important thing I would say about being a game designer, or at least the better someone is at game design, usually the better they are at listening to feedback, and realizing how valuable it is. It's so important that's what you want. You want feedback from people, and if you have an ego about it, then you're not going to survive, or at least the games that you make won't be as good because you're going to ignore some amazing ideas by other people.
Yep, I agree. So this is partially a legal podcast. So what legal precautions should you take or do you take when you work with partners or when you work alone? Do you, my first answer is always get it in writing, get a contract. I think that's the most important thing when you're working with someone else. But do you guys agree? Do you not care? Do you just sort of have a gentleman's agreement? How do you work with partners? Anything, I don't want you to say anything confidential or whatever. But.
No, that's a great question. So we debated that. We looked at, so if we start like an LLC mm-hmm. formally and assign the IP we're creating to that LLC, or should we start a corporation? We didn't want to do it like a partnership. There are limitations to what a legal partnership is, or even sure. a limited liability partnership. It has to be in certain fields. And then your assets are up for grabs if the partnership has problems or could be. So we really wanted to do like a corporation or an LLC. And so we looked at that and we decided it wasn't worth the time, money, and efforts. Like in California, we have this alternative minimum tax.
You sure do.
So you start your corporation and it makes $0 and you still have to pay the state of California $800 a year to have that corporation. So that's an $800 startup cost, you know, right out the get-go to have a piece of paper that says you're a corporation. And you have to pay that every year. And so we're like, well, how long is it going to take for a board game that we sign and we get a royalty for to make $800? And the answer is a long time. It wasn't really worthwhile. We looked at possibly incorporating in the state where my design partner lives, Texas, which is much more friendly
mm-hmm.
for that kind of thing. But we ultimately decided it was not worth doing.
Well, one of the issues there is if you're doing part of your business in California, you're technically supposed to register as a foreign corporation there, and you still have to pay that tax.
Yep.
We found that out too because Clayton's in South Dakota. So we registered in South Dakota and we were like, oh, we're good. But then, you know, I talked to a tax attorney, and he was like, no, you're not good. You know, you also need to file in California.
Right. It's terrible.
California wants this money, man. Ranked right. Bottom five for business-friendly states. Man, they're coming after right. you.
Well, that's the good thing about being a nomad is I'm never anywhere, so I don't know where
Catch
I am.
Catch me if you can.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I could just leave the country, I guess. Never come back.
So what we do now is we structure that into the contracts we sign with publishers. Since we're primarily going the publishing route and not the self-publish route,
mm-hmm.
So the contract we sign with the publisher splits the royalty or the advance or things like that.
Okay.
I tend to do more of the legwork for our game designs, more of the playtesting and building the spell sheets and pitching the game. My design partner, as his background in mathematics, is very valuable. A math consultant's very valuable. So what we've been doing recently is I get the upfront of whatever the upfront payment is. That helps cover my expenses of going to cons and doing things mm-hmm. like that. And then we split the royalty.
Good. Well, I mean, something is better than nothing. Not that I'm saying that's a bad deal, but I mean, it's good that you're getting something in writing that can define your relationship. I'm working on, I think I talked about it on your Forbidden Limb podcast when I was on there. I'm working on a website that will allow game developers to create contracts much cheaper than it costs to go to me, personally and have it drafted for them. So in the site,
the legal Zoom of,
exactly.
Games,
right.
That would be amazing, man. I'd be all over that.
So I created a module where you can create a partnership agreement. Cause a lot of developers, like you said, don't want to go with the LLC. I mean, if you do have something to protect, I would always advise you to, You can get business insurance that can take care of that stuff, and you can get an LLC. But if you don't want to do that, you can go with a partnership agreement that just sort of defines your relationship with your partner, how you can get out, what people bring in, how many hours you're supposed to work, all these things. And so I've built that into the contract generator. So I think it,
let me bring up one more relevant story
sure.
here. I run Protospiel San Jose, and because there wasn't any Protospiel or Unpub events on the West Coast. And I had gone to other ones in Texas and Michigan and Indianapolis and other places and Baltimore. And there was demand from game designers to go to one of these events. And there wasn't a lot on the West Coast doing that. So, mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to run one. So I ran it, and I had 200 people show up the first time. That made it like the second largest one in the country.
Wow.
And then I ran it again this year. And again, I had like 260 people, 270 people show up. And so now I'm looking at the possibility is, should I grow this into a con? It's already a 3-day event. Should I make it a con? And what are the legal implications of that? And I got some advice from the people who have had their own con. They're like, well, the first thing you should do is write a mission statement. And you need to have a very clear mission statement about what you're trying to do. And then you need a board. And so now I'm debating is, do I stay small and I keep doing this myself? Or right. do I go through the efforts of creating a mission statement and a legal document and trying to grow this beyond what it is?
It takes a lot of the fun out of it. I'll tell you that
it
when
does.
You have to start doing all that businessy stuff. That's for sure. Brian, do you have any insight into this legal nonsense?
Yeah, so don't use me as an example. I do it wrong. So Clayton and I have been, you know, friends forever. We've worked on so many projects in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So, people always warn me, like, you know, get everything in writing, like you said, and we have. I mean, we have an LLC, we have a operating agreement where, you know, we say how much we put into the company, how much of the company we own, and that kind of thing. So, you know, basic legal stuff.
Right.
But beyond that, I'm just so not worried about it with Clayton. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're just like the kind of people, like neither of us have ever gotten mad in our lives. Like we don't get into arguments. We don't
right.
fight. You know, all we do is just, we both just want to explore every side of a potential, you know, situation.
And you guys are childhood friends, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And you both know where you buried that hobo in fifth grade.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So nothing can come between us. But so... I think we're, I would only, you know, I wouldn't worry about that with Clayton, you know, but I do with everyone else that we work with, you know,
right.
and, you know, international publishers, artists, you know, graphic designers, everybody, you know, we get a very, very formal, contract, that we take a very long time, you know, going through and making sure is going to support both our interests and theirs. And so that's really important, you know, outside of our company. And I probably should take more precautions with, you know, just, you know, Clayton and I being publishing partners, but I just can't imagine anything coming between us. So no. we're doing it wrong. But I can't recommend that to anybody else.
But you have a partnership agreement and you have an LLC. That seems like yeah. you're doing it pretty right.
Yeah. Well, and one of the beautiful things about the law is that if you don't have a written partnership agreement, there are defaults. Every state has their general partnership act, you know, that will give the default arrangement for partnerships. So anytime you get into business with another person, if you're by yourself, you're called a sole proprietorship, right? And you basically have no protection. Everything comes on you, right? And that's fine. If you're working with someone else, it's basically the same thing, but it's called a partnership then. And there's a bunch of default rules, like any profit that comes in is going to be split equally between the two or three or four, however many partners. Now, if you have an agreement, let's say one person is putting in 90% of the work and they want 90% of the profit. Well, you can do that in a partnership agreement, but without that written agreement, they're legally entitled to their equal share, right? But you also have to share the losses. So maybe there's one guy that's the big money guy, and maybe he should be taking the lion's share of the losses. Well, you would get that in a partnership agreement. You wouldn't get that advantage if you just were working without an agreement. So that's one of the reasons why you want something in writing. And you can do that also if you have an LLC. You can have that in the operating agreement. You know, you can say who's getting what percentage of the distribution, who owns what percentage of the company. Without all that, you're just going to be default. Everyone's equal. So that doesn't work for everyone.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, let me think.
I should say I've also tried working with two other design partners on other projects.
Yeah.
And one did not go well, and one went kind of mediocre. And so that made me appreciate how well I do work with my design partner. As you're branching out and trying those out. And I may, right. I wouldn't be opposed to doing that again. You see other game designers in the industry collaborate with each other from time to time. You know, musicians certainly love to collaborate. So I'm definitely open to the idea of doing that again, but I may be a little more cautious now,
right.
having gone through that three times with three different individuals and seen kind of the pros and cons of that.
Yep. I mean, one of the problems is often one of the partners isn't pulling their weight, right? You expect them to put in a certain amount of hours every week or, you know, deliver a certain amount of assets for the game or something like that. And they're just not, you know, so how do you get out of it? You know, you're already stuck with them. So maybe that's, you know, that's part of my job as the lawyer to figure out, you know, to think of what's going to happen if, you know, you guys all sound like you're very happy with your partners and that's great. But what if things go bad? So that's where I come in and we have to build that into the agreement. What's going to happen? Who gets to keep what intellectual property? You know, who gets to make the game afterwards, right? Because as it stands, you both, if you're going in on this venture, you know, you by default, you will probably both own the intellectual property and you could both make your own version of the game. That's a problem if you don't want to be competing with each other. So getting these things in writing can definitely avoid a lot of problems, even though everyone gets into business because they're very happy with each other, but that doesn't always last forever, you know?
Right. And I think that's kind of where, we don't go, you know, we don't say how much, you know, Clayton and I have to spend on the company, you know, right. that kind of thing isn't as important, you know, profits, you know, dividing up profits. I mean, right now we're putting everything back into the company anyway. So,
right.
That's not as important, but you know, like how much money, you know, each person has put in, you know, that gets a little gray in some things, like going to conventions that I would go to, you know, on my own anyway, you know, I'm going to pay for that out of my pocket. So some of those things, you know, we should probably get into writing, you know, just so if somebody starts, you know, not pulling their weight, you know, then that
yeah.
people can, you know, kind of get upset about that, but that's not something that we would get upset about. We're all kind of in it together. We bring different strengths, you know, to the company.
Right.
And some of it's time and, you know, some of it takes a lot of time and some of it doesn't.
Call a lawyer as soon as possible.
Right.
I'm just kidding. Okay. Well, I think that's about it. Does anyone else have to say anything, have anything to say on the topic of partners or going solo? It's almost 1 a.m. for me here, so I'm, my brain is fading fast.
Yeah.
If I have future legal questions related to games, where should I send them? How should I send them to you for a future podcast?
You can find me at, actually, the easiest one is probably boardgamelawyer.com. I think I'm indiegamelawyer.com. GameLawyerBlog.com is my blog. I also have, you can find this podcast on LegalMovesPodcast.com or on my main website, on main, my main blog. And then there was GameDevelopmentContracts.com. There are so many websites that I own. It's actually kind of sickening. But generally, you can find everything I have at GameLawyerBlog.com is a good one. Jeremy, suppose I wanted a game designed and or published. Where would I go to find you?
You can find me at BoardGameBuilders.com, BoardGameBuilders.com, on Twitter at Jeremy Norcal, or my goal this month is to put up a game review, a visual game review, every day on Instagram, and I'm on Instagram at /JCommander.
What? Give me your top hashtag that you use on those reviews. What do you get the most?
It's just hashtag board game.
That's it.
Hashtag board game.
It's that simple.
There's not that much board game content on Instagram.
Yeah.
There's not as much as I would like to see. So Tasty Minstrel just did a survey with their mailing list. They said, hey, what social media do you want us to engage more on, put game previews on and content on?
Right.
You know, should we do more Facebook? Should we do more Twitter? Should we do some Pinterest? What should we do? And Instagram was the overall winner. Because pictures rule the internet.
Right.
And you look, so Brian mentioned in our previous episode about Reddit. And if you go look at the front page of Reddit, how many of those are images of those top posts? And it's going to be probably 75% or more are images linked to on an imager there. But imager is not the best social media tool. So, you know, pictures rule the internet.
Right.
And people like that more than anything. And then they like lists and gimmicks. And so if you can reach people through a visual medium, that's very engaging.
I think the way you're doing is very exciting, but I would throw on hashtag food porn or hashtag no filter, something like that, where people are going to check them out.
Just
okay?
Catch all the other.
It's my pro tip.
I'm trying to appeal to my niche, right? my niche and not get swept up in all the. Yeah, there's not a single food photo in my Instagram feed there. I will not waste
your
time with what I'm eating for lunch.
It's on the other hand, my Z Strebeck Instagram is full of food photos, so you know, if that's your thing.
And that's a lot of people do. They love that. A lot of people just, you know, they're a foodie, and that's what they're looking for on that medium.
I love food.
You know, I go to Pinterest to look for board game stuff, and that's what I'm trying to find there. And there is good board game content. There's lots of other content, too. But I'm looking for something specialized within that social network.
Right. Brian, where can we find you? What are you up to?
You can just search for me on Twitter and Facebook and everything else. We just did an Overworld Games. This is how late.
You can find Brian at theforbiddenland.com or overworldgames.com.
Yes.
Thank you.
Hashtag game porn.
Instagram. So we were talking about Instagram. We did just do an Overworld Games Instagram account, so we have probably 15 followers or something. But
you may have 15 more after this episode.
Oh, yeah. I got to follow that right now.
Right. But we took Tasty Minstrel's advice. I had no idea how popular Instagram was, but
and the level of engagement is huge. People look at it, they like it. The engagement you get if you do a good job there, if you provide visual content that they can look at, is big.
Right. It's very easy. I mean, if you compare swiping through Instagram to searching for anything on BoardGameGeek, user experience is much better on Instagram, unfortunately.
Right. So last thing, don't forget about our podcast, too, The Forbidden Limb. Theforbiddenlimb.com is where you can find that, or YouTube channel, The Forbidden Limb. But that's where you can find Jeremy and I talking about the business side of tabletop gaming, along with Richard New.
Yeah, Richard never replied to my emails, and I am shaming him into I want him to come on the show. I'd love to hear his perspectives on some things.
We can try to help encourage that.
Okay, perfect.
I'll give you a hot tip there.
Yes?
Richard does some work as a TCG designer, a game designer, for a website called thecontinuingcommunity.com. And they make a Star Trek game. That using the mechanics from a game company that's now no longer has the Star Trek license and using the the Star Trek imagery and license. And so they're in a very interesting legal area because they make this game. They don't make any money. They give it away for free. But they, you know, issue expansions to this TCG. They do like two or three a year. And so that would be a very interesting legal area to talk about.
Yeah, it always is. I used to do that.
Fan production.
Yeah. And fan edits of movies, fan productions, fan art, all of that stuff is such a huge thing that, and most of it is probably not legal, but it's one of those things where, you know, a copyright holder sort of has the option of enforcing it or not. And I think in a further episode, and I think we might have you guys back on to talk about that. You know, talk about the feasibility of protecting your copyright. You know, is it worth it to do any of that? I think it's an interesting question because lawyers like me are always saying, of course you want to register copyright. But, you know, it's for many publishers.
Does the U.S. Copyright Office have the worst website of all time?
It's very possible, yes. The old U.S. Patent and Trademark Office was worse. It's slightly better now, but
tech companies
it's
are
not
paying
great.
For that. Like, oh, we can't stand this.
I mean, there's your tax dollars at work, I guess. Yeah. Okay. Well, guys, thank you for coming on. I had a great time. This was a huge two-parter. I said we weren't going to go over an hour, and we are close to two. So that's a ton of content. I really appreciate you guys coming on. So I will hopefully have you on again. Thank you.
Sweet. Thanks, Zach.
I'm glad to be here.
I'd like to thank Jeremy and Brian again for coming on the show and remind listeners who enjoy the show to share the podcast with friends and review us on iTunes. We're a very new podcast, so any reviews can help out greatly. Check out IndieGenerator.com with that coupon code IndieGen50OFF. Don't forget to sign up for my seminar, Gen Con. It's happening Friday, July 31st at noon. It's called Avoiding Legal Pitfalls in Game Development. I'll see you next week.